It's just about 5 minutes after 9 o'clock at 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, where for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Time now for Talking Animals on KUCI. Thank you. That's music from Ed Harcourt with a song called Birds Fly Backwards as we slide into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. Streaming live, of course, as always, on the internet at KUCI.org. On the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, the whole nine yards, the whole anything else you could think of would be similar to that phrase. It is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you, for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number and call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls. Also, instant messages via AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name is Talking Animals. Other less immediate ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com and checking out our website, talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net, folks. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another Hot Topic laden rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. And congratulations to her her Thanksgiving stint on another station, further up the dial, as we might say. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our nifty website, again, talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast is archived. I like them apples. And as you would see there, clearly the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant. Of some province of the animal world. Today, in fact, we have two guests. Two, count them, two. Simultaneously, as we used to say in the UK. Jen Watkins and Patty Garvey Darda, two members of the I-90 Wildlife Bridges Coalition, which is a group in Washington State that formed in reaction to plans there to expand Interstate 90 for 15 miles in the Cascades Mountain Range, which is an area teeming with wildlife. And so they're working to ensure the highest standards of protection for that wildlife. As this expansion is undertaken, given that already, even in the I-90's present form, many animals die crossing that interstate. So we'll hear all about this coalition, ranging from the broader national implications in other states and areas that have similar challenges with freeway expansions, development, etc., to the different forms of expertise they're bringing to the project, including that they think if it's done the way they propose, that the wildlife can actually be better off even with the expansion. So we'll find out all about that when Jen Watkins and Patty Garvey Darda join us in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals. Not only this week's animal news items, of course, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss. Announcements, maybe you have a benefit, a fundraiser, some other notable animal-related event that you're working on or sponsoring or organizing. Be happy to mention that. Any observations in the animal world? Seems like there's various things dotting the news, some which we'll get to, some we can't get to all of them, but it seems like it's been a busy week in the animal news arena. And, you know, anything else really animal-related, all of it would be most welcome. If you'd like to call in, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So turning now to interesting or important, or both, let's hope, developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight. And with any luck, to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, okay, and this week, maybe this phrase is as silly as ever, but carries a bit more of oomph to it. Let's talk. That's right. Turkey, as it were. Produced as always by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, let's jump right in with, indeed, an international story. took this from the Sunday Times. Speaking of the UK, as we were momentarily ago. Can it be momentarily ago? I think momentarily is the future, isn't it? I don't know. All right, headline, Blair sits on fences. MPs vote to ban fox hunting. It starts off, the centuries-old pursuit of fox hunting was finally outlawed in England and Wales by the Commons last night. The ban will be forced onto the statute book tonight or tomorrow and is likely to be put into effect by February. Labour MPs mobilized to defeat a last attempt supported by the Prime Minister in what many described as a belated effort to wash his hands of the legislation to reach a compromise that would have allowed hunting in a limited number of areas under license. Ban went through after a last-minute compromise was rejected by 321 to 204 with jubilant Labour MPs cheering at the results. Mr. Blair, absent from most hunting votes, appeared for the division and voted alongside the majority of Tory MPs. Today, in the final act of a bitter and lengthy parliamentary drama, the House of Lords will stage one last show of defiance. It will refuse to accept the ban, forcing the Commons to invoke the Parliament Act to push it through. Either late tonight, then, or tomorrow, Michael Martin, the Commons Speaker, will deem the bill to have been blocked for two parliamentary sessions in a row and certify that it should now become law. But by then, the Lords will almost certainly have ensured that the ban becomes a big issue at the election next May, with the risks of the contest being bedeviled by protests from pro-hunt demonstrators. Goes on from there. But as we learn over and over on this show, and even coming up with our guests, Jen Watkins and Patty Garvey Dyer to join us. Progress is hard, isn't it? Yikes. And I don't even know if you could make some sort of even tongue-in-cheek segue from progress into this next story. Probably heard about this, read about it, saw on TV something, but a San Antonio man has created a website that will soon allow people to hunt wild game on a ranch from their computers. Currently, LiveShot.com only allows web service to shoot at targets, but wild game will soon be on the online range, said John Lockwood, the website's owner. The animals will either come passing by to feed or to water, Lockwood said. People will shoot animals by using a computerized system that lets the shooter control a camera that has pan, tilt, and zoom features and a firearm to shoot at real targets in real time. Lockwood said if online hunters kill wild game, his company will process the animal and ship it to the hunter. But some hunting groups even... Okay, the even was mine, sorry. Try not to load this up with editorial comment just yet. Maybe we will. Who knows? Anyways, but some hunting groups don't like Lockwood's idea, saying it is a canned hunt. Quote, I don't believe there's any sportsmanship involved in it, said Jerry Johnson of the Texas Trophy Hunters Association. There's no real hunt. There's no real experience with the outdoors. It's a joke in the hunting community. Lockwood said a site caters to disabled hunters who can't go out into the wild, etc., etc. Now, if I'm not mistaken, this ran earlier in the week, and I think they still have held off on adding the gun component, and maybe we'll do so indefinitely, depending on if even the hunting groups are saying this is ridiculous, maybe they will not proceed. Okay, on a relatively speaking, much more upbeat note, and it could be even more upbeat depending on how people respond, want to take a moment and talk about a dog named Barney, who's looking for a new family. And Barney is a purebred yellow lab. And he's blind and deaf. He's 5 years old, and I don't know all the details, but his owners, his companions, whatever you want to call them, politically correct or not, I guess are unable, whatever that means, to continue to care for Barney. But I'm just going to read from a little flyer I have here just because he sounds really, really cool. So I'm just going to read it from the top. I am 100 pounds of pure love. My owners could no longer care for me because I am blind and deaf, but that doesn't bother me a bit. In fact, you'd be amazed how quickly I find my way around. I'm a purebred lab with a big smile. I'm about 5 years old. My foster parents have taken me to the vet, so I'm up to date with all my shots and I'm neutered. The vet gave me a clean bill of health and boasted that I was a really, all caps, really wonderful dog. I love walks, people, kids, and other pets. I'm pretty strong, and even though I'm very gentle, I might not be ideal in a household with small children because I might accidentally bump into them. I am a very well-behaved and friendly and cuddly dog. I don't jump on furniture. I do great on walks. I would probably do best in a home where I could get regular attention and a few walks a day. I was told to lose a few pounds. I can't wait to meet you. Okay, so here's the other thing. A eye specialist has determined that Barney's vision, at least in his right eye, could be restored. Now, it'd be no cheap day for the surgery, but that's possible. Anyway, so if you think Barney currently lives in Northern California, but, you know, that A, I think people listen to the show there. B, I don't think that should limit anyone if you're listening and think, hey, you know, I'd like to have Barney join our household. So to find out more, you can, of course, email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. You can also go to a website and get the more information, including basically the flyer that I just read from. And there's a couple of really cool pictures of Barney's. I mean, he could not look sweeter. So the website is second, the numeral 2, and then ND, chance 4, and that in the case it's the numeral 4, pets. So it's secondchance4pets.org, and then as soon as you get there, you'll see where you can get to click on information for Barney. And even if you can't take Barney, there's also right adjacent to that an information, a thing where you could click on donate now to help Barney with his foster parents with their vet bills and towards his surgery. So we did that over the weekend. We sent actually a nice wad of dough in that direction. So anyway, that's Barney, really cool, sweet dog who should live with you soon. Yikes. All right, we are running so desperately behind. Okay, I'm going to skip this. We got to at least get in our quiz question because we got one. This is cool. This came from a listener. I always urge you to send in news items, quiz questions, song suggestions, comedy bit suggestions, etc. So sure enough. So today's quiz, as always, the first person who gets the right answer will get their choice of a prize, which ranges from the new Triumph, the Insult Comic DVD, to lint rollers, CDs, books, cat collars, toys, leashes, T-shirts, including a Talking Animal sweatshirt, lots more stuff. But again, we gotta keep it tight, gotta keep it moving. So here's the thing: the first person to call in 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI with the correct answer, we'll be able to choose from those prizes and more that we can even go into off the air or by way of email. Okay, so, according to research by Veterinary Pet Insurance, that's like 360,000 policyholders, they've determined what are the most common names of pets, focusing on male dogs, cats, birds. So, and this is from last year, top 10 of 2003. So, I'm going to ask you, what is the most common name at the top of that list for pets, male dogs, cats, birds? Is it Buddy, Jake, Sheldon, David, Max, Rocky, Rover, Barney? All right, so we've thrown in names from people on the air, from people not on the air, from other characters, but in there is indeed the most common pet name. So if you know, if you think you know, 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI. Okay, I got to get this in, though, too, because this is really an important, cool benefit. It's happening at the Key Club next Monday, a week from today, on November 29th, and there's going to be live bands, food, drinks, auctions, fun. There's the Vegan Vixens, Fashion with Compassion, Julian Barbary, the Barbie Twins, Ken Wall, music by Nimbus, Corey Leland, and the Groovy Gurus, Hella Fino, more and more. So again, that's at the Key Club on Sunset Boulevard, and the doors open at 7:30. The show begins at 8:30. And it's benefiting the St. Martin's Animal Foundation and the Paw Project's Animal General Hospital. And it's the benefit's called Anti-Abuse Fuse. So St. Martin's Animal Foundation works tirelessly to save animals on the streets of Los Angeles, promote humane care and education primarily for Latino communities. And the Paw Project Animal General Hospital provides free medical care to animals in need. And at some point we'll also talk about the Paw Project itself, which is a really amazing group that basically helped push through this law that Governor Arnold signed recently, make an illegal, you know, it's the first actually anti-declawing legislation in the U.S. So anyways, we're going to have the founder and director of that group on, I hope, in the near future. But anyways, all right, that's all we have time for, I'm afraid, for the news. If we have more at the end of the show, we'll come back to this. But we do want to jump into the comedy corner, and then we've got to get our guests, of course, Jen Watkins and Patty Garvey Darda to join us. So, having said that, if there are ever any news stories or announcements, events you'd like to bring to our attention, just like to someone who was nice enough to send us that quiz question info, email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. And again, please check out talkinganimals.net. Sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. And you'll also find archives and synopses of all, just about all the shows and photographs and articles and links and audio pieces and more. We keep adding more stuff pretty regularly. And so that's that. All right? Fair enough. Okay, so it's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which is always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Larry the Cable Guy with a piece called Shepherd Dog Poem on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
Boy, you know how much I love critters. God bless the critters. I'm a big fan of critters. All colors and creeds. And puppy dogs I love the most. But you know there's some puppy dogs you like to cuddle and hold, and other puppy dogs you hope they dry hump a chair and their wiener gets splinters. Let me tell you, I got me a good Australian Shepherd Dog puppy, and I done read a poem called God Bless My Shepherd Dog. It's going to make me tear up. Got to get a hanky. Hope you enjoy my poem. God bless my shepherd dog. I love him like a son. We play frisbee and ball and have a lot of fun. Whenever I'm lonely and sad, he's there with a smile. Cut off tail and all, some bitch would follow me for miles. In a world where folks is mean and rude, his four-legged love never ends. Harley ain't never had to scold him, except once when he growled at my colored friend. Boy, that's good. At nighttime when I'm sound asleep, my furry little buddy's keeping watch. He's like an angel sent from the Lord above. Boy, that shepherd dog's top-notch. He don't leave no turds on my rug. He knows outside's for pooping. He is a critter with a brain. That some bitch ain't stupid. He don't bitch when I watch TV and sit and drink a beer. Hell, I'd marry that damn dog, but I can't. It's a felon. Well, I ain't queer. Boy, that's powerful. That's good there. That's good. That's good. I like to kiss and squeeze him and take him to the fair. He's like a pair of titties, except with hair. God bless my shepherd dog. I think he's swell. And if anybody ever hurt that dog, I hope I burn in hell. God bless my shepherd dog. He brings joy to my soul. Dear Jesus, thanks for my shepherd dog puppy. I pray he never grows old. God bless my shepherd dog. Get her done.
All right, that was Larry the Cable Guy with a piece called Shepherd Dog Poem, taken from his album titled Salutations. And that's right, Flatulations. Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals. KUCI, 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way. And some of you, perhaps, arrived through our small website, TalkingAnimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. All right, earlier in our show I mentioned that this week's we have two guests, Jen Watkins and Patty Garvey Darda, two members of the I-90 Wildlife Bridges Coalition, a group in Washington State that we briefly tried to describe and explain their mission, but far better now, really, to have them do so. So let's remind everybody that they'd like to join the conversation. It's 949-824-5824 as we welcome Jen Watkins and Patty Garvey Darda to Talk Animals. Okay, Patty Garvey Darda, are you there?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. And I just want to tell everybody that you're a Forest Service biologist with the state of Washington. And Jen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Cool. And you are the outreach coordinator of the I-90 Wildlife Bridges Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks to both of you for joining us this morning. And Jen, perhaps the best place to start is for you to sort of briefly outline what the I-90 Wildlife Coalition, Bridges Coalition is.
Oh, sure. The coalition is actually made up of local and national groups here in Washington State, and it's really in response to the Washington Department of Transportation is expanding Interstate 90 right in the middle of the Cascade Mountain Range east of Snoqualmie Pass. And we responded because it's such a unique conservation situation out here in Washington where groups like the Cascades Partnership have spent over $70 million protecting habitat for wildlife just north and south of the interstate. And our sole job is just to advocate to make sure that we have good wildlife crossing structures and good science behind the project to make sure that the wildlife can actually get under and above this interstate and we can maintain those corridors.
And, Patty, I want to get to the impact and the implications of this for the assorted wildlife in a moment. But in the meantime, of course, I hope you'll feel free to jump in at any point along the way. Because I would like to talk about the freeway expansion and what is their objective? I mean, obviously, I assume just primarily to accommodate more traffic. But is there something else, or is it strictly that's behind the expansion?
It's really a combination of factors out there. Some of it is traffic flow. We've gotten quite a large amount of people moving into our Cascade Mountains out there, and it's in the central Washington area. But it also meets some safety standards. We've got some substandard curves out there that are pretty dangerous when they come through. And I-90 is our major freight and economic corridor coming east and west in our state. And so it's a big economic issue for freight as they come over the pass. At this point, avalanches do close the pass with snow quite a few days a year. So they're looking at adding truck climbing lanes and making it a safer road and something that will stay open throughout the year so we don't have to stop our freight movement.
Okay, so it is then beyond just the obvious thing of, hey, we can get more cars if the I-90 is wider. It's also, it'll be safer. There won't be the falling rocks, the avalanches, some of the other things that have bedeviled some of the traffic otherwise.
Definitely. That's okay. Kind of the wide interest in the project itself and why it's such a large one, because it brings every issue pretty important to the state, our environment, our economics, and safer roads all together in this one 15-mile project.
And either one of you guys, as really for the remainder of the interview, could jump in on this, but to what extent did the, in announcing the plans for expansion, did the Department of Transportation express concerns for how the expansion would affect the wildlife in that area, either in the construction phase itself or over time when the expansion was completed?
They have been concerned basically from the beginning, partly because they did recognize, and the U.S. Forest Service has pushed this somewhat, that the basically I-90 cuts the state in half in the Cascades, and so this is where they want to expand is a 15-mile area that links the North and South Cascades, and with the traffic volume at this point it's 30,000 vehicles per day. And I think within 10 years, they're anticipating it will go to 45,000 vehicles per day. Most people would tell you that's essentially a barrier to the movement of wildlife. Wildlife can't get through there. And it has kind of been an issue for a while that the roadkill levels were probably high enough that there was a very high risk of demographic isolation, basically isolating populations in the South and the North Cascades, and that would have pretty high risks to the viability of the populations, risks of extinction, that type of thing. And so they started funding some research back in, I think it was 1999, to actually look at where the roadkill areas were, do some snow tracking, camera sets. They were working with the U.S. Forest Service, and so we were doing a cooperative project to try to understand exactly where the wildlife were located and where they were moving through, and they funded a lot of work on to try to understand the ecosystem values there. So we did surveys for bryophytes, lichens, mollusks, amphibians, you name it, basically trying to really get a handle on the ecosystem we were trying to connect out there.
And was it the product of that cooperative study that sort of determined that what may or may not seem sort of counterintuitive at first is that if done properly, the expansion with new structures in place could actually improve the situation for wildlife?
Oh, dramatically, yes.
But I mean, the study kind of yielded that conclusion? Is that where that first was sort of advanced?
Yes, it became clear from the research that we did that the structures that we did have out there, the culverts that are under the highway, that type of thing, were not large enough to provide for the species that we were trying to connect.
So, Patty, maybe you could then, you know, since we're sort of into this now, sort of address how those structures work. I mean, also, people listening may want to, you know, well, may or may not want to realize that not only, of course, with a highway like that, you have animals that are hit by cars, you know, just as they enter the highway, but also, if I'm not mistaken, another factor here was the concrete barriers in the middle of the road, right? Am I right about that?
Yeah, the concrete barriers can be a problem. In addition, where the lanes, east-west lanes, are next to each other, there were some reflectors put in. So you have the Jersey barriers, and then they put in these reflectors. So then all of a sudden, I don't know, something like 5 feet high, 4 or 5 feet high, maybe 4 feet, and animals, even if they could make it through the one direction, they would have to jump over those reflectors blind. So they would just jump into the traffic. If they can jump that high, mountain lions can, some deer and elk can, bears can obviously climb over that. So that became a problem.
That's a secondary factor, but not an insignificant one, it sounds like.
Right. Yeah. Although the traffic flows, the Jersey barriers wouldn't make a whole lot of difference, considering that the traffic flows are high enough at this point that it's almost impossible. As a human, if you stand on the side of the road and you try to think about getting across, you can almost see that it's pretty much impossible because there's always just a steady stream of cars.
Oh, okay. So in other words, you couldn't even get to, no matter who you were, you couldn't even get to the point where the concrete barriers would even be an issue.
Yeah, I mean, they're an issue. It's sort of an additive, but even without them, it's a problem.
Sure. So Patty, then, and actually, maybe you've alluded to some, but what are specifically the animals, or at least primarily that we're talking about, that are most affected by this?
Well, it's essentially all of the species that occur in the Cascades that we're talking about. Obviously, the larger carnivores are a big deal just because they have very large home ranges.
Sure.
And so they need larger amounts of land.
So that's
mountain
lion.
You know, high risk of getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
And so those ones are an issue. So that's like... Wolverine is a very important one.
Okay.
Fisher, grizzly bear, black bear, cougars, bobcats, you know, you name it. It's basically all the carnivores.
Sure.
But it's also a big deal for species such as amphibians and reptiles. Reptiles
mm-hmm.
are attracted to the warmth of roadways.
Yeah.
And so a lot of studies have shown that it has a huge effect on reptiles. And amphibian populations, they've found even on roads that have much smaller volumes that the loss of populations is really significant.
Wow. All right, I just want to remind our listeners that this is Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. We're speaking with Patty Garvey-Darda and Jen Watkins, two members of the I-90 Wildlife Bridges Coalition, which is sort of advocating better and protected or more protected, safer wildlife passage for the proposed expansion of Interstate 90 in Washington State. If you'd like to join the conversation or especially have a question for either Patty or Jen, please call us at 949-824-5824. So, Patty, then again, yeah, maybe let's really talk about these structures, because it sounds like that's really the kind of central to how all this wildlife you've just described who are affected, how their sort of plight can not only be reduced, but their situation greatly improved even as the interstate is expanded.
Yeah, at this point, the highway is considered pretty much a barrier for most species. And the roadkill levels are likely to be high enough that it results in a significant loss of wildlife populations. So the construction, basically the structures we're talking about are bridges. The bridges are typically the solution you would put over wetlands. And we do have about a 5-mile stretch that there's wetlands throughout. And so we have a lot of species are associated with riparian habitats and wetlands. So in those cases, the bridges are the best option because the larger mobility animals like the carnivores and ungulates, which are deer and elk hoofed animals,
mm-hmm.
can go underneath, as well as some of the lower mobility species, the amphibians and a lot of the wetland associated species. Where we have the there's a couple areas where we don't have the wetland issues, and it's mostly the larger carnivores we're trying to connect. In those areas, we're looking at options like they have in Banff National Park in Canada, where they actually put an animal crossing that goes over the highway. It's about 100 feet wide, and it's sort of a humongous culvert that's cut in half. So it's just a bridge that goes over the top, and you put native soils on it. You plant it with trees, and you know, I was skeptical until I went to Banff and actually was on top of the structures. It's pretty difficult, if you think like an animal, not to think it's natural.
Wow.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that. I mean, that starts to answer my next question, which is probably a lot of people's question, is how do you encourage the animals who are used to going one way or traveling one way to then use those bridges? But it sounds like, in a way, you just answered it by what you put on and around those bridges. Patty, looks like we might actually, or Jen too, looks like we might have a call from a listener. Would you like to take a listener call?
Sure.
Okay, great. Hi, you're on the air live on Talking Animals with Jen Watkins and Patty Garvey-Darda.
Hi, I was just wondering how much support there is for this overpass like in Banff. Is that a viable option that people would support there?
You mean support in this case in Washington State? Yeah. That's a great question.
Well, actually, from an economic standpoint, it's not that expensive. It is expensive, so I hate to say it's not expensive, but relative to bridges, it's a cheaper option.
Okay.
They typically cost $1 million to $2 million. Bridges can cost significantly more than that. So this is sort of a solution that is a little bit cheaper, and there's been a lot of studies in Banff looking at these structures and monitoring them, and they do work very well.
Yeah, no, I know it's also it's very popular for people to go and watch, too.
Yes.
Definitely. I would add to Patty is that there's a huge support in this state because we realize there's such an issue out there. There has been 16,000 people donated within the last 3 years just to buy land right north and south of there for this wildlife. And just this summer in June, 4 people actually died right outside this project area by hitting a herd of elk. There's a definite public awareness about an issue out there, and a lot of people are willing to do it.
And with that in mind, what happens from here then? If it sounds like from what you are saying just there, Jen, that there's a lot of support, but what actually happens next? I mean, what are the obstacles that the coalition faces in its effort? And again, because we're talking, no matter, you know, whether it's a bridge or the thing like in Banff, I mean, it sounds like, you know, there's got to be money from somewhere along with whatever the freeway expansion costs are to execute this in the way that's best for our animal friends. I mean, how do people feel about that, and where's that money coming from?
Well, there's 2 major obstacles. One of them will be money, but the first one is right now the DOT is firming up its plans and design for this project. That's something Patty has been heavily involved in. And the role of the coalition is to make sure when they publish their draft EIS that we're able to look at it and make sure that these are up to the best standards of science we have so far, and that the design actually helps wildlife. That's where we're at right now, and that will be coming out this spring. We're expecting that document, and we need the public to comment on that document and back us up so we can get some bridges out here. And then,
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for calling. And then I guess I'm very curious then to know is where the Department of Transportation sort of figures into this equation. In other words, to what extent could the DOT decide to ignore some or all of the coalition's findings, recommendations, and move forward? Or are you guys sort of working enough in concert where that's not necessarily the issue? It's a matter of how many things that they will incorporate into the expansion.
I think that's the latter is more where we're at. We've had a great relationship with DOT so far, and we're lucky in this state that they have a great track record of being very open to considering wildlife considerations and wetland considerations in the state. At this point, what we're really looking at is the design and saying each little detail, are these crossings to the standard they should be? And a lot of their considerations come from a lot of transportation funding isn't out there right now. Mm-hmm. And we're saying if we put this kind of public investment into the lands where we're nearing $100 million that we've spent out there, we've got to match that with this project, and we can't be restricted by where we think funds are going to come from just yet,
mm-hmm.
but design something that's worth funding to start with.
Yeah.
And Patty may be able to speak to where she thinks the DOT's on that, because she's a member of the team who's actually publishing some of the scientific thoughts on that.
Yeah, that'd be great, Patty, because I, of course, wanted to see, Rick's right now, what the prospects look like to you.
Well, I think it's probably quite good, mostly because there's a recognition nationally that when these structures are expensive, and when you put in structures like this, you want to make sure that they're going to function. And some of the things you want are you want public land, you want good wildlife populations, and you don't want this risk of development, that kind of thing. And in this in Washington State, actually, Washington, Oregon, and Northern California, there's the federal lands are very well connected between the national forest and the national park lands, and the Northwest Forest Plan basically is the management for those lands, and it is an ecosystem plan that connects large blocks of habitat to protect for old growth forest habitat in the Cascades, and so the Forest Service has committed to protect the habitat. The habitat is basically protected to provide for old growth species, and they can see that the public interest, the Cascade Conservation Partnership, which is associated with this, the I-90 Bridges Coalition, has put so much money into trying to improve the habitat right next to I-90. So to protect all that habitat, put all the federal and public funds into that effort, and then not do the right thing on I-90 would probably be a mistake. And
sure.
I think they recognize that it's all sort of part and parcel to the bigger plan of how we're going to protect wildlife populations and not have future extinctions in the state of Washington.
Sure. Sounds like it's slowly, at least, but still heading in the right direction based on you know, everything else that people have already done. And Patty, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, I don't know if this has made it more of a challenge or not, but am I right in thinking that the only real firm statistics on you know, animals that are actually killed in that stretch of I-90 are deer and elk? Or are there ways to come up with other figures in terms of some of the other animals that you mentioned that are impacted in that area?
Yeah, the basically the WASDOT personnel do pick up deer and elk on the roadway, you know, for safety reasons,
mm-hmm.
After they're killed. So we have all that data, and we know exactly where that occurs, and we are using that for planning, because a lot of times where the deer and elk are trying to cross is also where carnivores are often following the deer and elk population.
Sure, sure.
And so we know that that's good information. But no, we don't have information on the other species and what the roadkill numbers are. But there's just a ton of literature out there on roadkill in pretty similar situations, and,
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty well known that it's significant. So it's not a stretch at all to think we've got the same thing going on.
Sure.
We do know, I'd add to that a little bit, there's some things, like there's a Project Cat that a man named Gary Kohler is actually tracking mountain lions.
Mm-hmm.
And we do know that he lost two mountain lions right near that project area. And we know that his mountain lions actually hang out quite a bit within a mile of the interstate as well. So there's a lot of smaller projects of where we know these animals are in this area.
Sure.
And then reports of their death. And backing up a little of what Patty said on why we know those roadkill statistics from the DOT, they informed us that 20% of their litter control budget is actually going towards picking up animal carcasses in our state. They even themselves recognize it's a monetary issue as well as safety to have animals wandering out in the road. So
So that brings me to then I think a question that of course would be significant to the extent it can be addressed is you know, given that on the one hand we have hard numbers, deer and elk in particular, and other things we have sort of either smaller figures or anecdotal evidence, etc. But overall, and either one of you or both of you could sort of take this, how are those numbers projected to change if the bridges and you know the project that the coalition is proposing get put into place?
It would bring it very close to zero.
Really? So it'd be that significant.
We would have to include fencing as well,
mm-hmm.
Because you want to fence and then so that you can funnel the animals in. But in Banff, they were losing, I think it was something like 30% of the wolves that attempted to cross. And after they put in the crossing structures and the fences, I think they've reduced that to zero.
Wow.
So it's very significant. And there's little things you do for amphibians, like you can put in jersey barriers that have a lip that goes out so that if animals try to crawl up, they fall down. This is what they've done in Florida with crocodiles and that type of thing. Or is it alligators? Alligators or
gators. Yeah.
It's gators, that's
yeah.
right. So this is sort of a common thing that can be done for some wetland species so that they don't get on the roadway as well. But I happen to think, like, one example, one study they did in British Columbia that was pretty close to a wetland, they counted the number of animals. I think it was in something like a two-mile stretch for 2 years, and they just basically picked up all the animals, and they collected 38,000 animals.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
Most of them were amphibians, but basically they found that essentially every bird species, small mammal species, amphibian and reptile species, and all the larger mammals too, basically anything out there was part of the roadkill population. So that was pretty significant to me when I thought about us having a 15-mile stretch we're talking about.
Absolutely. Well, and also, speaking of pretty significant, I mean, the fact that it would be basically zero, if this goal got put into place the way you guys are hoping to see it unfold. I mean, that alone, even though I know there's huge, financial and other issues to grapple with here, I would think at least gives us a significant shot of being ultimately accepted and finding the money for it. Because I think if you're, John or Jane Q. Citizen, or you're Mr. Bureaucrat or anybody in between, I mean, if you're saying, hey, this won't just improve it a little or even a lot, I mean, it'll basically eliminate those animal deaths. I mean, that's dramatic.
Yeah, the cost to the state would be, it's hard to factor all this in, but also in the state of Washington, people are very aware of what endangered species cost us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very expensive once something gets listed.
Sure.
And this is just kind of a proactive step to make sure that things aren't listed. And right now, the burden of endangered species is primarily on the public lands. And so this is the appropriate place for us to be managing for those populations so that, private landowners and that type of thing aren't as burdened by endangered species. So that's part of the goal. So that's why the Forest Service looks at this as just a really positive, proactive step to prevent problems in the future.
Absolutely. Well, we're just sort of nearing the end of our time, Jan and Patty, but one of the many reasons I wanted to speak with you both is that, as we've kind of even touched on, beyond this being a really enormously important matter in the state of Washington, the key issues here really have implications well beyond. I mean, the details kind of may vary, but the situation is, it's not universal. It's certainly found in a lot of areas that we talked about, Banff and some others. I mean, I think I read somewhere as I was preparing to speak to you guys that 1 million animals or thereabouts a day are killed on America's highways. Is that?
That's a quote from the Humane Society on highways, and that's what they've found and tried to estimate at this point.
Yeah.
And those two groups have done amazing work recognizing that for decades they've actually been doing these bridges in Europe.
Yeah.
And there's an even larger project in Montana that's trying to stretch quite a few lands on the premise that the highway could blend into the landscape a bit better. So as unique as this project is, because it is such a critical link and we have a one-shot deal to fix this small area where everything's coming from north to south, there's great examples of where people, even in California, are trying to do this closer to the cities where we're having some of these issues. So
yeah, well, what are, can you speak to some other, Montana, Banff, there's some other comparable situations in California or elsewhere that even if they're, not obviously the same, but have some of the same issues that are involved?
Patty, you can help me here. I know where the United States kicked off, which is a really, it rings a lot of bells for people, was the Panthers in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
They actually had such a small population that you felt like it was a ticking bomb. I mean, each time you hit one, you were actually decreasing the population. And that was one of our first real hold-em-up projects here in the United States to say that this can work and we can do a great job at it. And they actually elevated the road so the Panthers could get underneath it.
Wow.
In Arizona, they've done a similar thing with elk. They realized they had such a large roadkill situation that they did a similar. They just elevated the roadway, which are, we tend to drive by them and we don't pay attention because they're not as dramatic as a forested bridge going over an interstate.
Sure. But
they're terribly effective where they're actually letting wildlife underneath. Montana, you'll recognize anybody who visits over that way from Missoula down. It is a huge stretch of highway where they'll have, Patty, correct me if I'm wrong, I think they have over 20 structures they're working on that are either under or over the highway. In that
Sounds right.
And then in Washington, we're quite our own thing here, and they're still working on the project in Banff that Patty spoke to earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nationally and internationally, I think it's just something that is recognized as an impact on wildlife populations.
Sure.
And that's part of the things. One of the reasons I've been real pro this project is that in Europe they're spending millions of dollars after they've lost the majority of their carnivores, and so they'll spend millions of dollars just to connect one carnivore species. And in Washington, we still have all of our native species. Some populations are in low numbers, like wolverine, fisher, grizzly bear, that type of thing, but we still have all of our populations, even if they're in low numbers. And so my feeling is, if we're going to put in this investment, let's put it in now rather than later, like Europe.
Well, we still have them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, gosh, Jen and Patty, we kind of have now reached the end of our time, but I really, really appreciate you taking the time to join us on Talking Animals, and I think it's been really interesting. And again, I think as we've learned too, that there are numerous sort of comparable situations both in the States and other countries. And I just want to tell people, and I'll remind people again, that to find out more about this project, you can go to the website is i90wildlifebridges.org, and it's a great site with lots of information. And again, that might spin you into other paths too, if you're listening from other states, or I know we have some people listening in Canada and beyond. So thank you again for your time, and good luck, and it sounds like you're doing great work here.
Oh, and thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thanks
bye.
Again. All right, bye-bye
okay,
now.
Bye.
All right. Jen Watkins, Patty Garvey-Darda, I want to thank them for joining us today on Talking Animals. One more time, the website is i90wildlifebridges.org. It's, of course, time now to play Talking Animals, Name That Animal Tune. And, again, the only thing's different about that version of the Name That Tune is that it's animal-related. And this may or may not even tie in geographically in a way for our interview that we just had. But either way, I will play a snippet of this tune, and of course it's animal related. The first person to call in and correctly identify it will win a prize, one of those prizes we mentioned earlier in the show. So it's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. As soon as you recognize this animal tune, call us and you can win a prize.
Like a bird on the wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free. Like a worm on a hook, like a knife.
Ring a bell at all? Maybe. Canadian animal tune. The artist is Canadian. Kind of one of his more notable songs, but you never know. You never know what's going to ring a bell with people. You never know what tune they're going to be able to name. So, at any rate, I am Duncan Strauss. We have just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. Want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or University of California Board of Regents. Want to again thank our guests Jen Watkins and Patty Garvey-Darda for joining us on Talking Animals. The website to find out more about the I-90 Wildlife Bridges Coalition is, perhaps not surprisingly, i90wildlifebridges.org. Also want to thank you all for listening and for the phone call that we received. Next Monday, our guest will be Bob Tart, author of Enslaved by Ducks, a wonderful and whimsical book that chronicles Tart's misadventures, really, after he moves into a 100-year-old Michigan farmhouse and gets persuaded by his new wife to get an endless string of rabbits, birds, and other critters that they're, at least initially, ill-equipped to handle. The saga is so entertaining, amusing, and kind of episodic that it's no wonder, I suppose, that Everybody Loves Raymond star Patricia Heaton has optioned this book as a new TV project for herself. So either way, I hope you'll join us for our chat with Bob Tart next Monday, November 29th. And I want to again urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net. When you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, news stories, or like our listener did a few days ago, something that could be this week's quiz question. Maybe your email could be next week's quiz question. So at any rate, be in touch with us, talkinganimals@AOL.com. I really look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great, great blues show here on KUCI. And this has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're going to close things out here with an animal-related tune. This is Elvis Costello with Pony Street on KUCI. Catch you next week.
She lives on Pony Street. And there's some scattered flowers at her feet. But when they come calling, I think it's falling. They're sober and they're polite. They're deeply respectful when I would expect them to keep her out of that. That little martinet will get her awakened. If you need instruction in mind destruction, I'll show you a thing or two. You used to adore me, but now my life flashes before me for you to view. Oh mother, sometimes you were so mortified. From a hole in your leopard skin tight, I can tell you've been spying. The children who raise you confesses before the transgressors. Those super red movies of daddy in your disco dresses. If you're going out tonight, I won't wait. I'm reading that habitat. Watching them shopping for while you're walking a dead heart all the way down Pony Street, where you live in fashion. All the way down Pony Street, life in a zone never in discretion. That lives on, that lives on, that lives on Pony Street. Daughter, oh daughter, you know I will love you forever. Spare me the white ankle socks with the lace and leather. But you, your cartoon threat, you're no good to resist me. Well, I'm the genuine thing, but for you it's just history. If you're going out tonight, how can you be sure? When you lay your pretty hand, mother may have come in far. So you're flogging a dead horse all the way down Pony Street, where you live out through fashion.